the two types of views to arise, two types of veils to arise. In Buddhist teaching, it is said that there are two veils that obscure reality. One of those veils is called primitive views, which means a view based on limited understanding, a view based on individual experience, or a series of individual experiences that you string together and call an I, one moment of insight, or billions of moments of insight, or whatever. Primitive view is any view that is not inclusive of totality. That pretty well sums that up. And the other veil that obscures reality is called conflictive emotion. Conflictive emotion is any emotion that places conflict between subject and object. Primitive view is any view that is not inclusive and conflict of emotion. It's the same. It's basically emotion that is like collecting evidence for subject-object duality. Emotion that creates a feeling of conflict between self and other, or even if the other is another aspect of self. We're all pretty good at that too, aren't we? So there is this experience of craving that is ongoing, non-stopping, continuously arising, continuously occurring. It's called by the Buddha dukkha, dissatisfactoriness. There is this, so long as one is in form, there is dissatisfactoriness. There's a feeling that something's missing, something's wrong. In masonry, you use the symbol of the broken pillar. And you have the tree always with it, where, you know, you'll always have, like, the material that's been erased. You have a Catholicism, you have Eve, who represents matter, that is just plain sinful, and Mary, you know, creating from the tree the fruit that actually is the redemption fruit, you know, like the whole. Now, that's the two sides of the same myth. You understand what I'm saying? Am I being too? Just a little dog here. Okay. So over and over again, wherever you want to look, wherever you want to see, there is always this quality of desire and some state of wholeness. This state of craving and some state of wholeness that we're trying to attain, or that is ideally to be attained, or some way to be happy, or some answer to get. Who is it that's looking? And to actually be able to look, when, so long as there is form, there is going to be these two veils. So long as, I should maybe make that a little more clear, so long as there is form, there's going to be identification with a view and emotion to support that view. Whether the view is like, I'm a great teacher, I'm a rotten teacher, I'm a great mother, I'm a rotten mother, I'm a great exec, I'm a rotten exec, I'm mediocre, whatever it is, I'm better, I'm worse, I'm equal, the three conceits. I'm better, I'm worse, I'm equal, the three conceits. And you notice in a day we run through all three quite regularly, it's sort of like being at the gym and doing 10 minutes on each machine. Okay, it's time to do my I'm better, okay, now it's time to do I am worse, okay, now it's time to do I am equal. Kind of keep them all in good shape, don't we? No. I can't. She thinks I'm joking. It's true. No, I can't. But I can say that there is craving and there is this feeling that there should be some kind of wholeness, that there is something that should be done. And it's either, It's either because I am at fault that it's not whole, or it's because they're at fault, the dirty bastards are not doing it right, or it's I'm not sure who's to blame, I'm just going to try to figure out how to, you know, distract everybody from looking at me until I figure out which way it's when that coin doesn't want to fall on either side. One is me, one is them, and one's when the coin's spinning. Called greed, hatred, and delusion. So you have those three things. You have this kind of desire, this craving, and then from the craving there arises a false view. The false view will be based on greed, hatred, or delusion. That will satisfy, that will not satisfy. This is right, this is wrong, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a self who's intently going to ride that to some kind of gratification, which then again leads to the craving, which then again leads to the false view. Which then again leads to conceit, which is then again leads to the craving, which then again leads to the false view, which then again leads to conceit. I'm describing this, but this happens so quickly. This is like so quickly. This is a nanosecond beat. This is like little beat of consciousness occurs so quickly, so quickly. These three together are what are called the Dharmakara in the Tibetan tradition. And in all of this, there's a three-sided pyramid upside down inverted. It is the cervix of all creation. All phenomena are born from these three. This is the door without gates. This is the gateless gate. This is the birth of all phenomena. It is also the birth of the phenomena of enlightenment, because enlightenment is the result of action. So, what you want to do is figure out who you want to give birth to in the next moment, not react to the past. So first of all, you have to learn how much of the time you are reacting to the past. So the first thing you do is you look at how precious it is to have this human birth so that you actually feel like you've got some power. That this is an opportunity, this is a joy, this is a great, magnificent opportunity. And so having settled the mind, which means that you allow yourself to just feel like you're here, you notice that, geez, we're here. There's your bum on there, wherever. Your back, there's your toes. There's the temperature. Here we are. Think that even though there are times when anger manifests in oneself, is that true? Can you even think that there are times when there's anger manifesting in yourself? Let yourself consider that. Yeah, that's true. To such a degree that one actually wishes the person or event provoking dislike were not present. Yeah. Let yourself remember. This is not a circumstance in which one is continuously dwelling. Yeah, it passes. Consider what it would be like to be constantly assailed by not only what is unpleasant. Imagine dwelling in that state of agitation. Don't write it down, Tony. You can have a copy later. But actually painful, to the point where it's actually painful, where you're continuously assailed by what is dislike. Consider just being caught in that, frozen in that moment. Let yourself consider when you dislike something and being just caught in that, never any relief. This is hell. That's a hell state. That's hell. Recall clearly moments within the past 24 hours when there has been strong dislike. Realize that it is only due to the flexibility of view that one is able to detach from that dislike. To see other possibilities. feel compassion for that mind state of anger. Not yours, not theirs, that mind state of anger. Allow yourself to recall anger and feel a sense of compassion. For the suffering of being caught in that, feel a sense of compassion for anger. If unchecked, it would lead to living in hell too. Seeing the possibility of hell within one's own being, allow a sense of gratitude to arise in relation to one's present perspective. Think that even though desire for what is not present manifests in oneself, is that true? Desire for what is not present manifests in you? To such a degree that one is actually not able to experience what is here. This is not a circumstance in which one is continuously dwelling. Consider what it would be like to be constantly consumed with desire for what is lacking. To be relentlessly eaten by hunger for even the most basic needs without respite. This is life as a hungry ghost. Recall clearly moments within the past 24 hours when there has been overwhelming desire. Realize that it is only due to the flexibility of view that one is able to detach from that desire. To see what is actually available. Feel compassion for that mind state of consuming desire, which if unchecked would result in living in hungry ghost state. Seeing the possibility of hungry ghost existence in one's own continuum. Allow a sense of gratitude to arise in relation to one's present perspective. Think that even though a love of dullness of not seeing the events around one too clearly manifest to such a degree that one is actually unaware of present conditions until either fear or necessity intervenes. This is not the circumstance in which one is continuously dwelling. Consider what it would be like to exist without the intelligence to perceive the dynamics of one's environment. Until events are so unavoidable that there are few, if any, options available. This is life as an animal. Recall clearly moments within the past 24 hours when attachment to dullness held sway. Realize that it is only due to the flexibility of view that one is able to detach from trance-like stupidities and become aware of cause and effect. Thereby developing long-range understanding. Feel compassion for the mind state of overwhelming confusion that longs for the peace of dullness, which, if unchecked, would result in living in animal states. Seeing the possibility of animal existence in one's own continuum. Allow a sense of gratitude to arise in relation to one's present perspective. Think that even though attachment to possessions and positions arises in one's life to such a degree that one takes agreeable circumstances to be inseparable from oneself, this is not the circumstance in which one is continuously dwelling. Consider what it would be like to constantly assume that physical, mental, and emotional pleasure is one's right, completely ignoring all signs that suffering and impermanence exist, until suddenly one's own being is marked by old age and death. This is existence in the God realm. Recall clearly moments within the past 24 hours when the happiness one has been experiencing has been suddenly interrupted. Recall the shock of disbelief and anger provoked by that interruption. Realize it is only due to the flexibility of you that one is able to maintain awareness even in blissful circumstances, and so not be caught by the prideful attitude of thinking that unpleasantness cannot possibly infringe on one's existence. Feel compassion for that mind state of prideful limitation, which lacks stability because of the inability to comprehend the interconnectedness of all beings. If unchecked, that state would result in living in God's realm. Seeing the possibility of existence as a God in one's own being, allow a sense of gratitude to arise in relation to one's presence. Perspective. True recognizing that every moment of consciousness tends to arise conjoined with a view based on past experience, become aware of the powerful illusions developed by habituation. Each one of us is constantly packaging the unending ocean of consciousness into waves of coarse and subtle views, which disappear as soon as circumstance changes. These views are linked to a continuous impulsion towards self-grasping, motivated by greed, motivated by hatred, motivated by delusion. Open the mind to acknowledge the profound understanding attained by a Buddha. Such a being is able to cut through all partial views because he or she is motivated to go beyond the eight worldly dharmas and perceive things as they are, with compassionate, non-clinging awareness. This accomplishment is beyond intellectual comprehension. It is very rare even for one who aspires to accomplish this to appear in the world. Even more rare is when such a being, having experienced full enlightenment, will teach that path to others. The arising of a Buddha influences all conditioned realms for many years. The time of this influence is called the dispensation of a Buddha. We are now living in the dispensation of the Buddha Shakyamuni, who not only fully awakened, but was moved to teach the way to others. To be born during the dispensation of a Buddha is a very rare and blessed circumstance, particularly when one considers the eons of time when no such event occurs. Not only is this birth human and arising during the dispensation of a Buddha, but it also affords one the opportunity of hearing a teaching. There are many places in which humans have no opportunity to hear valid teaching. Consider all the people one has met. It is clear that many use their precious time trying to create some type of comfort and an impermanent existence. Others are motivated by the hope that someday a great reward will come to them. Still others feel that there is no purpose at all to existence. For many beings, there is no conviction that this time is exceedingly precious and that each person has an innate ability to use this life with power. Dharma is the teaching that opens this understanding. How fortunate to have somehow met with a valid teaching in this world of doubt and desire. To be able to actually practice the teaching one has received, it's not easy. It requires time, commitment, the good fortune of suitable companions and spiritual friends, and the intelligence to learn from cause and effect. If one has serious impairment of the six sense doors, practicing Dharma becomes even more difficult. If one has the good fortune of inheriting a body with all six sense doors in working order, that is richness indeed. To be able to understand and find joy in the validity of Dharma is also an uncommon trait of human existence. For example, many people may intellectually realize the truth of impermanence, but that realization is ineffective in their lives. For them, the imminence of death is an idea rather than an experience. The sense of existing as an independent or separate self keeps them from acquiring wisdom. Perverted views based on ignoring the non-existence of a permanent self or soul close them into an unteachable state. Clinging to a sense of separation, they twist whatever teaching they hear to conform to their limited view. For such beings, the human birth does not afford its most precious gift. The cause for obtaining a human birth is practice of virtuous deeds and abstinence of non-virtuous ones. This cause is rarely present. In any one day, the number of mind states that give rise to other types of existence greatly outnumber those that result in human birth. See that this is so by examining the thoughts that habitually arise. Determine what motives are most prevalent in your life. This precious human birth is like a suspension bridge built over an abyss. Having found a way of crossing, it would be extremely foolish to try to make the bridge into a permanent abode. Even more foolish would be to attempt to keep others from causing disturbance on the bridge by trying to remove the part on which they walk. It is one bridge, suspended by the same laws. If I cause them to fall, so will I. These thoughts of self-serving judgment which arise in my mind do exactly that. Imperil the opportunity of this precious birth. By being attached to the present position, I lose the opportunity of this birth. I need to focus on the crossing rather than on self-pitying, spiteful, distracted, greedy, deluded thoughts. With all my heart, I wish to be completely free of the control of negative mindset. Now focus on the breath. With the first inhalation, imagine a net of pure aspiration moving through one's being. gathering all unwholesome mind states into the heart. With the out-breath, feel these states exit the right nostril like a black fog, dispersing into boundless space. On the next in-breath, image that all the blessings, wisdom, and power of enlightened consciousness enter the left nostril in the form of white light and fill one's body. Let the breath move out so that it's equal blessings inside and out. And then on the next in-breath, image that net of pure aspiration is moving in the left nostril this time. The left nostril. And moving out, taking all these Do three breaths like that, using whatever nostrils you want. The net coming in, pure aspiration, filling your body, gathering all self-pitying, spiteful, distracted, greedy, deluded thoughts of breath and moving out. In breath, enlightened consciousness. All breath, sharing that with all beings. The third time. Having 8 opportunities and 10 blessings in this human form is so much better than being a god. It is just like a pauper finding a jewel. For so many reasons, cause, number, example, and so forth, it is difficult to find a human form, but for this moment, it is impermanent too, like a bubble of frost, certain perish soon. At that time, since nothing but Dharma is even a hair-tip path, meditate on the profound path, the very heart of the Supreme Path. So we'll make copies of this at lunchtime. Do you all want copies? So when you get your copy, you'll notice that I have a picture of what you look like on the inside. That when you actually look in, you'll see this is you looking. And this is what you see, all the different aspects of yourself in there. I'm sure you'll be able to identify your favorite. Particularly useful. You'll notice that one pretty clearly. It should make you feel right at home. Makes me feel right. So we have lunch and whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together. The gold light has gone out from your heart. We share it with all beings so they reflect that. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered. By our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Okay, and unless you regard that as precious, you're not going to use it. If you only feel like you're who you are in between those different in those different states, you miss that flexibility of view that's between those states. Or like they say on the London Underground, mind the gap. But no one is too, mind the gap. And bring consciousness in when there is nothing that's habitually focusing you. Ride the consciousness on a clear mind. not just on anger or greed or fear or delusion or clearness. And you start getting an idea from that. Thank you. You get an idea from that of what a clear mind is. That's only a first step. That's only just an idea. Thank you so much. That's only just an idea of what a clear mind is. It's like just a beginning taste of what a clear mind is. That's better than not having any idea at all what direction you want to go in, or whether it's even possible. Much better than, well, maybe someday if you're really good, and if I hold my lips like this every time I say diddly book, then I'm going to go to heaven and everything will be all right. No, I forgot to hold my lips like that. Okay. So I'm having a bunch of rules and regulations, so having a clear idea of what it is you're looking for, how you want to find it, and what isn't it. So as usual in Buddhism, you start with what isn't it. You can clearly define that, then you start to be able to let go of those things that don't work. Well, you got things that do. So any questions? Answers? Comments? Complaints? When you have forgotten about beautiful and non-beautiful, and you're totally engaged in the beautiful, and so the non-beautiful bumps you, then you can say, oh, but there's nobody driving it, so you can be free of having a personal enemy, or is that what you think? Excellent. Yeah, exactly. Inquiry. Mm-hmm. Inquiry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. You have to really know, isn't it? That topic is very hard to what you want for that. You know, to keep that
inquiry. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's wonderful, isn't it, to have that? That's a power, isn't it? I mean, that's actually, I mean, there may very well be the initial anger or whatever. But then to just say, oh yeah, that's energy, and, oh, what is this boat doing here? Tradition in the Bible, and I think it's in the Old Testament, maybe in the New. I can't remember, it's so long ago since I read it, meaning more than 20 years. And there's this verse that I used to always find so beautiful, and it is, when a man follows a beast, he is blessed. When a beast follows a man, he is cursed. And it's the same saying in the Tibetan is consciousness, which has no legs, drive winds, which have no eyes. So the winds are the beasts. And when the winds ride you, you're cursed. The winds of the emotion. When the bestial rides you, you're cursed. When you swallow that, when that's motivating you, when that's nourishing your choices, then you're blessed. And indeed, and maybe the spirit inquiry, or maybe the immediate so for you it goes because for you undoubtedly obviously you have a talent for perception, for discrimination. You like to see the reason why things happen, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else, they might have a talent for mothering. You know, you're more of a what's it got in its pocket kind of mind. And somebody else might have more of a, oh, make sure you got both your hands in your pockets because then you'll be winger kind of mind. Do you understand? So for them, maybe they would say, oh, here's an empty boat. I'll bet you other people may run into it. May all beings who run into empty boats be free of suffering. You see, so it's a totally different reaction. There can be many, many different reactions to the same circumstance. It's nice, isn't it? Nice to see that. There are different talents. We're not all the same. We're all different. Everyone has a talent, the talent of delusion. It's the ability to have an overview. Deep, deep. An intuitive understanding that there is a way. So delusion types, they kind of bumble around and then all of a sudden they got it. But you ask them how they got it, they go, well, it's right. Whereas, you know, hate types, they can say, look, can't you see, it's just this, this, and this. Whereas greed types say, it's just a feeling. So, you know, there are different ways of operating. There are three main ways if you're a Buddhist. If you're not a Buddhist, you probably have more choices. Buddhists have three. I don't know. There's a loose board in this. Oh. Pardon? Is it? Greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed is, there's something wrong in here, so maybe if they eat more, that will make it go away. Hate is, I'm fine, but I don't know about the rest of you suckers. And delusion is, well, I'm not sure inner or outer, I just can't make up my mind, oh, geez, I don't know, did you guys go for a walk, by the way, at lunchtime? Do you know that Tony did, he made us walk back from the restaurant, he dropped us at the restaurant, he just dropped us, didn't he? I bet he's done that to a lot of, anybody here, anyone else here, ever been dropped somewhere by Tony, and could I just have a show of hands here? Or maybe you know someone who was like Tony. Anybody ever do that? And if, yeah, who dropped you somewhere? Right? Right? You know what I'm saying? So what happened to the delusion type I was talking about? That's what a delusion type does. Leap, leap, leap. So you never actually get the answer to your question, do you? They do intuitive overview. They could see how one thing might lead to another, to another, to another. It says, like, you know, I'm not sure which I should commit to, so... Very handy talent. So it's as I was making my tea, and you know, as a greed type, I'm fairly refined in my greed. I don't, you know, it doesn't just come out all over, but I do have this thing about making tea in the morning in my own home. We have our little ceremony. The tea should be this kind, it should be with this kind of water, it should be like this way, because there's so many, and this, this is the cup. I just made my tea and I suddenly realized it was garbage day and the garbage man was probably going to come any minute and I hadn't collected all the garbage. So I collected all the garbage because I still got, like, and then I got 30 seconds to take the tea out. Right? But I think I hear the garbage truck. So there's somebody out there, so I start talking about it to them. It's a perfect delusion tactic. I don't know whether I should take the tea out early or take the garbage out and get the, you know. So immediately I say, geez, you know, I just don't know what I should do a third option. So what happened, I'm talking about the delusion type and then all of a sudden I mentioned the weather and going for a walk and then we're looking around to see if anybody in their lives ever met anybody who made them walk home from a restaurant or, you know. Like, what does it have to do with your question, right? Yeah, but you were forgetting it too, weren't you? As we started thinking, as I'm, you know, you could see yourself trying to remember, you know? So delusion times, like, just brilliant for weaving an overview and getting you ready in there. They are what we would call intelligence in our university. because they're good at theory. Very good at theory. Aren't they? Just very good at theory. Unfortunately, they get lost in them. Fortunately, they get lost in them. Greedy type, unfortunately, they get lost in shopping. Fortunately, they get lost in shopping. Faith, greed becomes faith because you always think that the next problem is going to be better. Hatred is intelligence because you can see exactly why the fly in the windshield is going to spoil the whole trip. Right? The ability to see the point, don't you find that? Do you? I'm talking to you, yeah. There! Right there! The fly in the windshield. There! Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Do you see how beautiful that is? Do you see how beautiful that is? Do you see how beautiful that is? You recognize it in someone else, you see? That's exactly what I'm describing, isn't it? Isn't that beautiful? It's very useful to know the main category of way you operate. Because then we are all three. And it's very useful once you can identify yourself. I mean, you know, like you're a human being, so I hate to break this to you, especially you hate types. I know the greed types already recognize this, and the delusion will just make a theory of it. But I hate to break it to you hate types, like you can't be all of them. I know, and do keep trying, but it's not possible. So therefore, they're all of the time, depending, all of them all the time. However, you will manifest one of them more often than the other two, but we will all manifest all three of them. Is that clear? So if you know which one you tend to manifest, and you know what one people around you can recognize, actually, oh, this person is intuitive over you, or dull, or whatever you want to call it. Oh, this person is this, or this is that. Then you have a better way of being compassionate, don't you? Then you actually know how they're seeing better, so you can actually adapt to that. It's only when you see these mind states of greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, of realizing what is precious about your life, that then you can accept them in others and actually have more skill. You can't have skill unless you're acknowledging yourself, and then allow it to be in all beings. You can't. You can't have good relationships. You can't. You know, I remember a man told me one time many years ago, and he said, you should congratulate me. And I said, oh, okay, congratulations. Yeah, right, congratulations. What for? And he said, well, I've awakened. Well, shouldn't you congratulate me? You know, isn't that what happens when you're awakened? You see Buddha nature everywhere, isn't it? I mean, something I'm not getting here. So when you have skill, when you can see it in yourself, you can see that other people aren't just their unfortunate inability to see how wonderful I am. Their bad taste in actually disagreeing with me isn't the whole story yet. You forgive them these minor indiscretions. And see, they smarten right up. It's incredible. The more you allow it in yourself, the nicer everybody becomes. So strange. You think they were doing the meditation too. So curious how everybody gets nicer when you do a little practice. Now, did your question get answered about stuff? This sounds like greed to me. Okay, how come? Could I have more, please? Please, could I have more? Can we just go somewhere else with this too? Well, when you can identify them. It's like standing in front of the mirror. This pose? Or this pose? This pose? Or hi. Really? Really? And so therefore, you're not bouncing off the surface. Therefore, you can see deeper. Therefore, you just continuously fall in love. You know, it's hot with the ball games of your eight worldly dharmas. I won't work with anybody that I don't love. But that's pretty easy for me because I love all of them. Agreed, Sam. I don't have that problem. You might have a little more problem with that. I love you if you just do this. So. Could you just stop saying this? Take time to move faster than any other time. So that one day I'm moving. Like a rocket. Just getting the moving. Great idea of getting to stop moving. Could you say more about it? Great type. Great type. Could you say more about it? That quality of like, well, I just like a little more. Why not? Yeah. And the faith of that. There is a sense that, you know, oh gee, I forgot to lock my door. Oh well. I rest my case. Definitive words before you really know? Would you like something really definitive before you have to make something else? Does it scare you, this stuff? Say so, isn't it? Wiggle your toes. Right foot. Do you have a right foot? Yeah? Can you stretch your toes like this? Can you stretch them like that? Pay attention to what muscles are moving in your legs. Let your breath go. Stop holding your breath or I'll take my teeth out and bite you. This is my most serious threat. Stop holding your breath. If you stick your tongue out, you can't hold it left. See, you're telling me that, didn't you? I'm serious. You quit fighting what is present. Wiggle your toes. Quit fighting what is present. Keep your focus in the present moment. You're not doing it this way, though. Stretch them. See? Just the one foot. Just stretch your toes sideways. Which muscles are moving in your leg when you're doing that? And like, let your breath go while you're doing that. Put your mind totally there. Don't put your mind in the middle of the confusion. Put your mind totally on the feeling of the muscles in your leg. Totally. Trust yourself. Your body knows how to handle emotion. Your mind does not. It is not you. It's a wave. Let it be. You keep yourself grounded in your body. Your body is like a channel. It will let the energy move through, then you're clear. Otherwise, you're caught in the wave. You're just rolling in the same wave. You get totally caught. It's very painful. Don't do that. It's not fun. I mean, I don't think it's fun. If you really are enjoying it, don't let me interfere, you know. But I don't think you want to do that. Use your toes. Really do. Stretch your toes. How many of you have ever had me tell you this, you know, ad nauseum? Does it work? Yeah. Thank you. I know, it wasn't 50% of the group, but... Stay present. Keep your focus. Are you keeping your focus in your foot? See, watch the mind drift away. Oh no, bring it back. I know, and I will continue to. And you keep your focus there. You don't have to lose your sense of your body in order to listen. You don't have to drop all your boundaries to hear someone else. That's not true. You don't have to give over all your authority in order to be somebody who is listening. It's bullshit. You do have to maintain yourself in your ground, respect inner and outer equally. Wiggle your toes. So wiggling your toes will keep a balance so that you can be present. You hear the outer, you also hear the waves of that outer moving on the inner, and you have an actual way of hearing in depth what you're listening to. You don't seal this off in order to have an experience of this and then watch the reactions of this later. No. We're present. We're permeable. We're part of the whole dance. You don't have to make yourself separate in order to hear something and then join later. You'd always have to live your life like a movie if you did that. That'd be terrible. I think you should do that.
Delusion! That's what you are. Delusion!
Kick your toes. But is this the least bit interesting to you all? Classical teaching, there are three main types of beings. Did I tell you that joke about that true story about the Tibetan mother who had twins? Did I tell you that? She had twins, you know? They were like five years old. It was time to give them a real present. And one was a greed type, one was a hate type. So she went to the local lama to see, you know, what's a good, auspicious gift to give my sweet little chilies, children.
On their fifth birthday, because I want to really launch them on a spiritual path here, eh?
She was Canadian, so she said, eh? Canadian to that. And so the lama said, oh, let me see, your hate types here, you have to give them. The thing with hate types is that if there's anything imperfect, they're going to freeze. Or they're going to be looking at what's imperfect, and, you know, they're going to look at them fly and not the windshield, right? So what you got to do with hate types is you got to give them a whole bunch of absolutely exquisite gifts. And you're saying, which one do you like the least? And they'll pick the fly that you didn't even know was there, so you just give them the other one. That's how you do it. He didn't say that. You have to give them a bunch of exquisite little gifts and all perfect and everything. Greedy types, no matter what you give them, they're just going to get greedy about, so the best thing to do is to give them something, you know, put a booger in the middle of their chocolate cake, you know, something like that. Because what you got to do is stop them from eating ad nauseum, right? Hate types, you got to get them to take a piece. Greedy types, you got to get them to not take a piece, right? So that's what she said, oh, thinking about this birthday, you know, and she calls them down in the morning, it's time, you know, and they come down into the room, but she's out of the room when they come in, and so she comes back into the room, and the hate type sitting there, and there's all these absolutely perfectly wrapped, probably about 50 different, absolutely exquisitely wrapped, you know, just incredible. And he said, so what's the trick? And the greed type, he's over in the corner, and there's this huge, huge burlap sack of shit, and he's going, I know there's a pony in here somewhere. Oh, sigh. So you notice that this preliminary practices, in the beginning I have just a short introduction to the three types, basically, the three levels, not greed, hatred, and delusion here, but small, medium, and large, according to the Tibetan tradition. And those who are small are beings who do not see the value of altruism. They can be greed, hatred, or delusion, but they don't see the benefit of altruism. It isn't that they consciously don't see that, it's that they have such a level of fear in their beings that they're always looking for their own safety. It's because the fear in them is so great that they're always looking for their own safety. Is that clear? Traumatized, whatever, doesn't matter. So there is this feeling. And so if you're going to be working with someone who is in that category, you would not ask them to do a meditation that required them to let go of all sense of personal safety, because it wouldn't be successful. It would only cause greater fear. It's not skillful, right? And second level, medium level, is where there is a sense of that you actually feel better when you're kind than you do when you're not kind. In fact, you will do for others what you won't do for yourself. In fact, that your heart of generosity is more important to you than having your own piece of cake, even if you're a greed type. And so that altruism is a preferred way to be, and you figure that the reward will come someday. It isn't really important. That really for you to continue to do good is the way you choose to live your life. That's the second level. The third level is when you read in, it can, I've heard it two different ways. The way I've got it written here is, someone who believes that no, it isn't a matter of future, it isn't a matter of doing, it's a matter of right now, right here. What is truth? What is the meaning of reality? Here, now, at this moment. Forget all of this. I don't want to know about safety. I don't want to know about feeling good. Well, cease to do evil is the first one. Learn to do good is the second one. Purify the mind is the third. It's like purify the mind of past and future. And so there are particular teachings that you would do for that state. Well, the other way I've heard of the third one is when purify the mind, that quite often beings who are in that state think that there's nothing they can do for anyone else. So that it's still clinging to the view that I am the only one who can understand this. There's nothing I can do for others. Yeah. So that's the two ways I've heard it described in my limited experience in this lifetime that I can remember and then drive on. I hope that's useful to you. So then, that's what the first page is basically talking about this. And then the meditation on the precious human birth, which I recommend, maybe every full moon do it for three days. Just sit down and read it. Can't do the whole thing. You can't take 40 minutes for yourself. Then maybe put it in the bathroom, you have reading material in your bathroom. How many of you are grief types here? Yeah, so you have reading material in your bathroom. So like, read one a day. Read one a day while you're sitting there. And then focus on it during the day. If you can't do a real practice, then do something, add this to something you're already practicing. But substitute this for your crossword puzzles or whatever else you do there. Is that clear? It's like if you want to develop a habit, hook it to a habit. It's a painless way to do it. And so then at the end, I didn't read all of this, as you'll notice when you go on with it. So there's a page missing in mine. Oh no, page 6 and 7 are reversed, that's all. Mine goes 4, 5, 7, 6. Does other people's go 4, 5, 7, 6? Some people do and some don't. Yours doesn't. Yeah, well, as long as the pages are here, it doesn't matter. This is a picture of a being called Vajradhara who represents the mind of awakening. She's a blue figure. Quite often his hair is down. In this case, his hair is up. And so this is, I've gone into some detail describing the symbolism of the Tibetan tradition and this Guru Yoga. I talk about what a teacher is. So if you're going to be doing this practice, you probably only want to read that stuff a certain amount of time, but then maybe just highlight the paragraphs then that actually are involved with the actual visualization that you do, so you don't have to go through all my blah 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 every time when it's useful you, but when it's not useful, then out of respect just offer it away and get on with it. That's it. It's a very beautiful practice. And then a short afterword that tells you how to use The sevenfold prayer is one of the really useful tools. It's in the back of this. If you many teachers from all of the schools suggest if you can do no other practice but you repeat the sevenfold prayer every day, that will have a great power in your life, and I totally concur with that. And then the afterword is just a summary, short form of the two teachings. And then the worldly ideals is the last three pages with, as I said, a quote from my favorite writer, the Buddha Shakyamuni. And that page is also reversed in mine, so some of you might find that. So I hope this is worthwhile to you. I hope you. And thank you so much. And is there a fee for making copies? So, do you want to stretch a little bit? You're feeling comfortable? Okay. When you were doing the practice with the pebble in your shoe, and you were watching the beautiful and the unbeautiful, did you find that useful, or did you remember to do that? How many of you found that useful? How many of you didn't remember to do it? How many found it useful? How many of you didn't remember to do it? So that's why you were wearing the pebble, so that you, when you really became aware of the pebble, you could then think, okay, what is it that am I right now more involved with the beautiful or with the unbeautiful, habitually, okay? And then having decided which one you're doing, then you could say to yourself, okay, how do I see the unbeautiful in the beautiful, or the beautiful in the unbeautiful, whichever one. So that you're balancing your habitual state. That's what that pebble is for. That is basically the meditation, the development of loving kindness. That is basically what loving kindness is. Loving kindness, when it is fully developed and practiced, becomes the ability to walk and live and breathe and eat and function in a state of boundless, unobstructed beauty. Not lust, not hatred. A general sense of seeing the order, the beauty. You understand that kind of, it's almost like an idealistic order kind of energy. How nothing in this world arises without cause. Nothing in this world is wrong, is out of proportion. Everything arises with cause. To have a sense of anger or dislike or trying to get rid of something that exists is to not understand cause and effect. To have a sense of faith in cause and effect gives you the power then to decide what effects you would like to cause. Awakening is an effect. It's something that you plant the seed for. That's called the Eightfold Path. It's like very specific. You want to get there, this is how you do it. You have two things you need to work with. You need to work with views and with emotional states. The views are the direction, the emotional states are the gap. How you work with views and emotional states is the steering, is like and dislike. Where do you want to go? That's what you want to know. Okay, where do I want to go? So you want to have some experiences of some kind of clarity so you can actually decide. No, you look at the worried mind. Is that what you said, walking down the street with a worried mind?
Yeah.
You look at the worried mind and you find something beautiful about it.
Oh.
You find the beautiful in the unbeautiful, and the unbeautiful in the beautiful. Yes, my example is that if you look at it, you will find it. See, and especially for a greed type, the first thing is when you notice that, and mostly, probably, most of those states will have to do with yourself, don't they? Yeah. So then imagine if you actually had to actually fall in love with yourself. Now there is some grief and blah, 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 blah. But what if you could be at ease within and without equally? With a sense of beauty. That's the only point, isn't it? Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, and first they can't put themselves in other shoes. First they have to put themselves in their own shoes and realize they're not safe. And somebody is concerned with safety. It depends on the degree. I mean, if it's a state of actual, major paranoia, or like somebody who is autistic or something like that. Is that what we're talking about, Jeff? Severely abused. Then the most important thing is to establish the sense of care. The first sense of care. And then within that sense of care, when those times when I've had the good fortune to have close relationships with people who were subjected to quite powerful abuse, what seemed to be most beneficial was not to go into their ground totally. Have certain rules that they could come out to. Does that make sense? And there was a woman who wanted to share a house with me. I often used to move around, and people would invite me to different cities, and I'd live here for 3 months, there for 6 months, so I'd rent a house, or somebody would give their house or something, and various people would move in with me. Goodness knows why. Level of masochism, I guess, I don't know. And when I would do that, I would, if people went to work in the morning, then we had to meditate for an hour and a half before anybody had to leave for work. We had to be in the meditation room. And so then people would get jobs earlier and earlier, so then we'd sit earlier and earlier, and it just doesn't work that way, for example. Or someone would come in, but they would want to sit on the sofa. They were hale, they hadn't any accidents that I hadn't had, there was no reason, no, you can't do that. These are the rules, we work within these rules. Within that, anything is acceptable. You manifest within these rules. There has to be a communal place that I also feel safe in. I cannot spend my time going into another person's space totally.
You need to have some ground rules.
Neutral ground rules that we can meet in. Yeah, that are of benefit to many beings. Okay. So having established that, then you can point out that any rules, but by starting by where their preferred rules outside of that established safety is, are not safe. Having established a pattern of safety that's a halfway between where I'm willing to go and where they are willing to go, then begin to show that, you don't know when something is going to happen. At this moment, there is safety. But I don't know when something is going to happen. I wouldn't do it with them. I would do it with me. I don't know when I'm going to die. Somebody said to me about 3 months ago, I'm really thinking of moving to... I live in this very small town. Oh, God, this is... The Buddhist population, 1% of the population became Buddhist when I moved there. And then... two other people, friends of mine, moved there, and so it was a 300% increase for the Buddhists in town. Right after I was there, it was very strange.
And this other person is saying, you know, I'm thinking of moving to this group. And I said, I could die at any time. That's my first reaction. And I'm here right now. So I'm saying it very crudely, but that's the first place I go. That, you know, whatever you think is safety, like love, care, be present, offer all of the necessary framework, and say, this is a conditioned state, and as long as we are subject to conditioning, we're not safe. I'm saying that to them, maybe verbally, maybe not verbally. I'm saying that to them and to me because it's true. Because there's no point in lying. So that one trauma makes you think, it makes you develop a false view that you have safety and need to leave somebody in a burning house because they think that by hiding in the closet they're safe is not smart, is not compassionate. If I can, it would be nice for me to suggest there is still not too much smoke in the hallway. Do you want to try another way out? And also, there is no safety. You know, first you have to make them see that what they're clinging to is not useful. Without taking it away when they can't use it, when they really need it. You know, like reaffirm that, reaffirm what's present. Also reaffirm their ability to move back and forth between that and where they meet you. Because generally speaking, when somebody hears that and they don't want to hear it, they will go back with space. And you just, you know, keep the music low but happy in the communal room. And think how nice it would be if they were there and say prayers and they'll reappear. So I know every time I do a retreat, after I leave the retreat, I'm always like full of the joy of what I've just learned and how I'm going to practice that and everything's going to be wonderful. And then I sort of learned it. And then something happens in my life that makes me think, oh, maybe I should do that. So then it must go in my life. You learn something, then you take it back to your little closet. And then you put a window in the closet. And you start figuring out how to make the wall bigger. You see, we all have the power to do that. So if I keep my eye on that power in someone, and that's the part of me that I'm always talking to, I will not ask for what they cannot do. Because I know where their closet is. I know where they have a good view. I can feel their power. And I'm happy for them to be free of fear. So that's how I do. Is that useful? Any other? Yes. It's very shocking.
And that can be explained more to all the reason that if you're talking about hearing on the accidental basis for the women asking to be a female. How do you reconcile actually sexual confusion with the attention to women?
Do you not think that they, what needs to be reconciled? To steal oneself away in pride of not being there. That's what pride is, what I am not. Isn't it? That's what pride is, what I am not. Pride is sitting there in your limo with your tinted windows up. Difference between me and them. The limo can be one of poverty, it can be one of equalness, it can be one of superiority. That's pride, and it's based on fear. Always, if you look underneath pride, there's fear. And so that is like
the stag says the same thing. It's exactly the same as this view that we're talking about. This is where I know who I am, so I'm not leaving here. It's pride, basically. It's like, this is an identity. You wouldn't call that an identity, maybe. But really, you can see how there's like that white knuckle clinging to what one can do. I don't want to know about. Yeah. I would imagine a whole lot of people went partying to try to forget, or will. I had a friend who had malaria and almost died. When she came back to Canada, she moved near me and she started going partying. Partied every day. What a good idea. Not just to forget, you know, just to block it out. Pride. Because you don't know what to do. Because you don't know what to do. You feel overwhelmed. So get in the limo, close the window. The number one thing to do is practice and remember this meditation. But not everybody can do that. So the next thing to do is have a sense of kindness to yourself. Say, I am in shock. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to react. I'm not sure where you want to take the question. Could you give me more direction? Amazing, isn't it? Incredible. And to actually have a choice of teaching and the power to actually go for an afternoon or two or three.